Hello, this is Brian Tilley with the latest Nikonians podcast. This month we have an interview with Klaus Brandt. Klaus is a freelance nature photographer based in Bonn, Germany. He was recently chosen from over 400 entrants to be awarded the prestigious title European Wildlife Photographer of the Year 2005. Klaus also hosts wildlife workshops and safaris across Europe and in Africa. His next two workshops are already sold out, but there are still some places available for his visit to the world-famous Kruger National Park in South Africa in June. Klaus is an active member of the team at Nikonians, making a great contribution, particularly to our wildlife and landscape discussion forums. Hi Klaus, it's good of you to find time for this interview.
Hi Brian, thank you very much.
Okay, so let's start with the beginnings, I think. How did you get started in photography?
Well, I started with photography at the age of 7 or 8. My family used to spend the holidays in the Alps, so my first images were landscape shots taken with a Zeiss Icon, a German brand single-lens reflex camera, which actually no longer exists. It was my father's camera with a very basic light meter. Actually, I only exposed according to the Sony 16 rule. And I remember some discussions with my dad, who had taken an image with both. We both considered to be a good one, as we both used his camera. And to stop this, I got my first own camera 1 year later, which of course was no single lens reflex, but rather a very simple point and shoot camera. A few years later then, I bought my first own real camera.
Okay, what was that?
Don't tell anybody at Nikonians, it was a Minolta. I wished I could have afforded a Nikon at that time. But as I also wanted to have some lenses, this wasn't possible at that time.
I see. Do you still have that one and use it?
Yes, of course. I still own it. Sometimes use it in workshops to demonstrate how a single lens reflex camera works. You cannot really do that with a digital body. I don't shoot with it anymore, and I don't even consider to take it as a spare body, as my current Nikons are quite reliable.
I'm sure they are. So what was your first Nikon camera?
My first Nikon was an F80, but only until I found a used F5 in a decent condition. The F80 really was not what I was looking for, and the F5 fulfilled all my needs. I still love it, except the fact that you need lots of batteries for this beast.
Yes, I guess that's true. So that's how you started with the cameras. Can you perhaps talk us through your development as a photographer?
Yeah, sure. Well, actually I think that I develop myself from day to day still. And all the experience and knowledge I have about photography is self-taught. While in school, I worked in a photography project group, but I liked being out for shooting much more than doing all the darkroom work. And, at that point, I decided to use slides instead of print film and started to investigate how to produce interesting slideshows already. Looking at the work of the great masters, I first tried to imitate them, and step by step, I developed my own style. And as I said, I'm still working on refining it.
Good, okay. So when and what made you turn pro?
There have been several events in my life that made me think about whether my job in information technology is what I wanted to do for a lifetime. I decided that I rather want to be out in nature and share the joy I have being out taking images with others. Teaching how to become a better nature photographer gives me more satisfaction than spending a 9-to-5 job behind project plans. So I finally took the plunge, and here I am. It is definitely a totally different world I do live in now. Don't think I'm a rich man, money-wise, but now that's not important for me anymore. I love my job, and I like what I'm doing.
That must be really good. It must be good to have a job that you're enjoying all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, good. So let's move on to talk about your approach to photography and your style of photography. Mm-hmm. Do you have a particular method you use when you come across a new subject?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I think I'm a bit different to other nature photographers in the way I do it. You have to know that I'm not striving to get natural history or documentary shots of animals. What I am after is more the artistic images, the artistic approach. So I'm rather looking for a special mood, special color compositions and the like. Of course, you have to know the basic behavioral effects of the subject you want to shoot. And this also helps to avoid being injured at close encounters with dangerous animals. And ultimately, this is what helps to show the little extra.
So how important is it, do you think, to create your own style?
Actually, my style is very important to me, as I think it should be for every photographer, no matter what you mainly shoot. It is important that people recognize an image as being taken by me. Take, for example, the images we see in the Wildlife Forum. Even if there would be no member name mentioned, it is easy to tell which images were taken by Phil or Marcel, for example. This is not only because they are outstanding photographers, but they pursue a certain style they like and want to be identified with. I'm not sure if this can be said about my shots already, but I'm working on it.
I think you can. So is it your style something you chose yourself, or is it something that your customers demand of you?
I'm working for customers that like my style. It's not always easy, but anyway. The market of wildlife imaging is a highly competitive one, and you have to offer some new ideas, new ways of looking at things. But with this set, I would never adapt my style just for business's sake, because then I would have reached a point again where I don't like anymore what I do. Yeah. Only thing I have to care for in that regard is that I don't die as a poor genius. Yeah.
Yes, good point. How has your style changed or developed throughout your career?
Well, that's an interesting question. I just asked that same question to Andy Rose lately and had to smile, because just as I had to when listening to the Chris Wessner interview, because it seems we all went through similar steps in our wildlife photography careers. When I started with wildlife, all I wanted was reach, more reach, and that is big glass to get close-up shots.
Yeah.
With me getting more and more advanced, I stepped back and started showing animals in their natural habitat. So no, I don't long for a 500 or a 600 millimeter lens anymore. At least not for mammal photography.
Okay, I see. Right, let's talk about problems which we all have when photographing now and then. When you get a creative block, how do you overcome that?
That's a good question again. Actually, I had one last year. I took the image of the two fighting wildebeest in the Kalahari, and in July I knew I had won that award.
Right.
Now, what is your next goal after taking such a breathtaking shot? I really couldn't anticipate any new image. That's what I normally do. So I took 2 weeks off with Viola and my two kids, and we spent the time in a small house in Sweden, not thinking about photography. But to be honest, after a week I grabbed the camera again. But actually, that was because my son wanted me to take some images of grasshoppers he found around the house. But indeed, these creative blocks happen, and sometimes I think the more advanced you get, the more creative blocks you may encounter.
Yeah, I think that may be true, quite right. Let's move on a bit now and talk about your photography as a business. I've said in the introduction that you run workshops. How do you choose the location for a workshop?
My workshops are tailored to suit the needs of different skill levels, and a workshop location also has to meet several criteria depending on the kind of workshop I want to offer. Considering day schools, for example, these are normally held in a zoo-like location, one which offers the best possible sight of animals without disturbing fences. The reason for this is that for a one day or even a weekend workshop, we need easy access to our subjects to practice shooting. Yeah. This is also true for the week-long courses like Helgoland or the Bavarian Forest. But here we have more time, but in general, and we can return several times to one spot. But still, the goal is to practice shooting, and you at least want to have one animal for it.
Yeah.
Helgoland is somewhat exceptional, as here you can shoot wildlife in zoo-like conditions. Yeah, you walk up to the birds' rock and encounter thousands of birds, or you take the ferry to the dune and find a colony of seals. So that's in the wild. Yeah. So you could say, I try to find spots where my customers have both the experience to shoot real wildlife and at the same time don't have to wait as much as you normally have to do in my business. That's a challenge, sure, but on the other hand, waiting is also a part of the experience of what it means to be a wildlife photographer.
Yes. How much time do you spend planning a typical workshop?
To set up a new workshop, it takes me about 2 weeks. This includes dealing with sponsors, location scouting, etc. But that is my time only. All the logistics, for example, hotel reservation, transportation, and other things are managed by my dear partner Viola. You might know her as Skipper in the forums. We try to offer what we call all-inclusive workshops, which means we also care for accommodation and conference room for the theoretical part. The hotel then also has to be as close as possible to the shooting location. And you could tell I'm really glad all this is taken care for by Viola.
Yes, obviously she does a good job for you then.
Yeah, definitely.
So what and where is your next workshop?
Yeah, actually the next workshop is again the Nekonian's Helgoland workshop we already ran in last year. So in April this year we'll be on Helgoland again. It's a 5-day nature photography course, and we are already fully booked on this one. Again with international customers, which is very interesting part of this. Helgoland is a beautiful place for nature photographers. We will shoot birds and seals in the natural habitat, being out in the morning and afternoon for about 6-7 hours. On the midday break in the evenings, we spend with theoretical lessons about color theory, image psychology, post-processing, digital workflow, for example.
Yeah.
The main focus is on image critique based on the theory. And after this week, everybody will return with significantly better images than he has imagined. And Nikon and Gitzo also support me on this workshop again. So participants are able to test the big guns from 300 to 500 millimeters, pro bodies, and also the Gitzo tripods.
Right.
And of course, we will have lots of fun again.
I'm sure you will. I hope I'll be able to join you on one of these years.
Yep.
So how do you go about marketing your work and your services?
Most customers book the workshop through my website, but I also run advertisements in nature photography magazines. A lot of marketing, though, is hearsay and recommendation by former participants. Actually, running a workshop that meets customer expectations is better than any expensive advertisement.
Yeah, I'm sure that's correct. So, on these workshops, which are obviously very successful, what lessons do you think your students have learned from you?
Hope there are any. I think the most important lesson is that patience really is the key to success in wildlife photography. And that knowledge of animal behavior, or if you don't know that, if you don't have that knowledge, good observation really helps to achieve outstanding images. See, what people normally do when they arrive at a spot like Helgoland with thousands of birds is they just shoot away.
Yeah.
And the next day they shoot some more with not significantly improved results. And those who concentrate on one nest, they came back with much better images than the day before. Actually, participants don't believe me at the beginning, but the third day they normally admit that there is some truth in my words.
Yes, I'm sure there is. Okay, that's good. We've talked about your photography as a business there. Let's move on a bit and talk about the techniques you use and some tips for our members, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
What's your most used lighting method for your wildlife work?
Well, I love to work with natural light, especially the warm light of the first hours in the morning and the last ones in the late afternoon. And for wildlife shots, I sometimes use full flash to balance the lighting conditions. And in macro photography, though, it's a different case. I use flash more often there. I've just acquired the new R1 C1 ring flash, though, which is a pleasure to work with, if somebody's interested.
Yes, I've noticed that one. It looks quite interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm glad you're pleased with it. Okay, what's your favorite photographic location?
So far, there's only one word. It's Africa, definitely. Yeah, the light, the colors, animals, temperatures, maybe the wine as well.
Yes, I'm glad you included that one. Do you see a potential image easily, or do you have to work hard at finding the image there?
Not sure if it's bragging to say that I can see it easily. Or yeah. Well, if not, I'd say that I haven't developed a certain eye for what is worth working on or not. One has to differentiate a range of goals. To get a special action shot of a certain animal, for example, you surely have to work on it. Yeah? You have to work with that animal or that species until you have achieved what you're looking for. On the other hand, it sometimes is a matter of seconds to judge if a scene is worth pressing the shutter or look for something else. It's funny sometimes when driving through Kruger, and although I've seen, for example, a rhino, I pass by because I'm searching for leopards, and then tourists laugh at me because they think I haven't seen the rhino.
Yes, you know what you're doing, though. Well, when you're shooting, then, do you try to compose your shots in camera or rely on cropping them later to get the effect you want?
Yeah, most of the composition is done in camera. That is because I used to shoot slides before, and I want to have the greatest amount of image data available for print.
Yeah.
Cropping surely helps sometimes to adjust the final composition.
Okay. Talking about some shots you've taken then, what do you think was your luckiest shot?
Yeah, this is definitely the award-winning shot with the two wildebeest engaged in fight in the Kalahari. It was really a matter of second to stop the car, reverse, and wait for the sun to rise. Only a few minutes later, diving the scene into that deep blue orange tone you can see on the image.
Yeah,
I was able to shoot about 8 frames, and then they stopped fighting and walked their way. So definitely the luckiest one.
I've seen that image, and it's certainly a great one, so well done with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you still seeking, even after that one, are you still seeking the perfect image?
Not the one perfect image, but of course there are quite a few images I like to have in my portfolio. I won't tell you now what that is, because I don't want to see my ideas on the coins before I'm able to put a CF card in my camera.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
So, what's your typical keeper's ratio then?
Well, that's a secret, Brian. With film, it was about 1 to 2 images per roll, but that strongly depends what I'm looking for. To catch a funny or interesting behavior, I fire away and select 1 or 2 images out of, say, 15 to 20.
I see, okay. Has changing to digital affected that ratio then?
No, not really. With my first digital body, I started to shoot much more than I did with film. But as anybody else, I reckon, I soon discovered that processing all these files and making the decision which one to keep takes too much time, so more than the selection process with slides, actually. So now I only release the shutter when I'm convinced the image has the potential to be a keeper. But I like the sound of my shutter, so sometimes I forget about post-processing.
I see. Right. We started off the interview talking about your background and your first cameras. What camera body or bodies do you currently use?
I currently use a D2X, and I was lucky to be one of the first ones in Germany to get one, and I really like that camera from the first moment. It really has all I need.
Right.
I used a D2H before that, and before this again I worked with an F5, so the first camera I bought when turning to digital was a D2H.
Right. Okay, and lenses, what's your favorite or lens you use the most?
Well, the lens I use the most is probably the 200 to 400, but I also like the 70-200, so yeah. These two lenses are my workhorses, so to say.
Yeah. Okay. How do you then select the right lens for the job?
Well, I think that's more a matter of pre-visualization and planning, actually. See, today, for example, I only took along 2 lenses, an extreme wide angle and a 70-200, because I was able to approach the animals quite close, and so I was happy not having to look around the tripod and the 200-400.
Good, okay. So what are your criteria for buying a lens or renting one?
First of all, it has to be a Nikon lens. The lens is, it's because the lens is what finally determines image quality. And although I only buy the Nikon lens, I'm really no easy customer when it comes to lenses, because I want them to be as clean as possible.
Right, right. Okay. You said there that you're currently using the D2X, which is obviously Nikon's top-end digital body. When did you first employ a digital SLR?
I turned to digital in April 2004. It was on one of my Helgoland trips. I was convinced that image quality is almost as good as film, so I bought a D2H. And I wasn't happy with its noise in the beginning, but I'm still amazed which outstanding image quality is produced. I compared Velvia slides and digital captures, and although the Velvia still brought a smile on my face, I rarely touched my F5 after I had the D2H in my back.
Right. What was your the catalyst or the reason for switching to digital then?
That was cost per image. Well, at least in the beginning. Yeah. I thought digital would make the price per image drop, but actually I think shooting digital is more expensive than with film. A digital body like a D2X is 2.5 times the price of an F6, for example.
Yeah.
And you need backup devices, compact flash cards, a powerful computer, backup storage, and most of all, you need really the time for post-processing, and what you didn't need with the slides.
Yeah, it's a big step, clearly, but one that I guess has been successful for you. Has digital been a steep learning curve for you?
Well, only in the way that I had to learn the different raw converters produce significantly different image quality. Yeah, and that there is still no software that handles the whole process from raw conversion to image catalogization in one package. Part of it is in Photoshop CS2 now, but I personally prefer other programs to file my images.
Right, okay. So has using digital to capture changed your work?
Yes, definitely. Working in the field is much more efficient now than it was with film. After a day out shooting, I check whether I got the shot I wanted or not. If so, the next day I focus on other subjects, yeah, or take situations that are difficult to meet, or a quick test shot and examination of the histogram is all I need to carry on shooting with confidence all the images are properly exposed. If not, well, then slight adjustments can easily be applied in raw conversion, another advantage of digital capture. Yeah.
Yeah. What post-processing do you undertake as a... In general terms?
I won't tell in detail, that's part of my workshops. But actually, it comes down to the most basic steps, like really raw conversion, level and curve adjustments. And sharpening is that's an important information, maybe. Sharpening is really done at the last step. So as soon as I know which is the output media, if it's for print or web, then I apply the appropriate sharpening.
Right. Okay. And which tools do you use?
I use Adobe Photoshop CS2 exclusively. I found it to be the most versatile tool on the market.
Yeah, okay. Certainly a very popular one.
Yeah.
How much time would you spend typically on processing each image?
Well, that strongly depends on how good the raw file is. Images taken at high ISO settings, for example, they require more post-processing because I have to remove the noise. I would say the average time is about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thanks. What spec is your computer?
Well, there's nothing special or high fancy. I use a standard Windows PC with a few hundreds megabyte of mass storage and 2 gig RAM. I need the Windows machine to produce my multivision slideshows, but I think of upgrading to a Mac G5, actually, which then should be a dedicated image processing machine. The most important part of my setup is my screen.
Yeah.
Here I use a 22-inch pre-press screen.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's move on a little bit and talk about storage and archiving of digital image files. When you're out in the field, what device or devices do you use?
In the field, I use a portable storage device that has the sound name of PD70X, it is called. It reads compact flash cards and holds a 80 megabyte hard disk drive. I always bring my laptop, which has two hard drives installed and a second external hard drive as well. And I back up the data then on the mobile device, on the laptop, and the external drive. In the trip in the Kalahari in March last year, I burned DVDs, but after a day with the D2X, I happened to spend 3 hours just burning, and I really didn't like that, so now I just rely on the hard drives.
Right, I can understand that. Yeah. And then when you're back at base, what else do you use then?
Yeah, the keepers, they are burned onto DVD as raw data then, and the processed images are saved in another set, so on another DVD. And all the data is also available on external hard drives, and I nevertheless still feel a bit uncomfortable with all that data handling. Yeah. Mm. I still have my slides I shot about 20 years ago, and they look like they were taken yesterday. I hope I can say so. I hope I can say that about my digital files in 20 years' time.
Yeah, I think we all hope that. So, talking about 20 years' time then, let's do a bit of crystal ball gazing. How do you see the future of digital photography?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. Maybe I express my wishes, rather. I've never been great in predictions, that's the reason why. So the main problem I want to have solved before seeing more and more megapixels is really the dust or the specs issue. Say, I use a 5,000 euro camera, but after a week shooting in the desert, I have spots over and over. Of course, I can clean this sensor by blowing the dust away, but I refuse to do that with these sensor swipes that are now available.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the rest, I leave the predictions up to the forums. I long waited for the D2X, and I think I will be happy with it the next few years. But in fact, I will even buy an F6 again. The power supply in remote regions is really one of the biggest issues of digital photography.
Yeah, okay. So, getting towards the end now, let's have one final question, and perhaps it's the most important one for members of Nikonians. Why did you choose the Nikon system?
Well, that's a simple one. Thank you, Brian. There are several reasons. For example, I'm shooting with my glasses on, so the high eye point view finder, they are excellent for me. You know, it's something the other brand doesn't have. And reliability, of course, is another very important issue, because in the field, I really don't care for my equipment. I only make sure the glass of the lenses, they don't break. For example, last year, my D2H fell to the ground from the roof of a Land Rover. I held my breath a second, but except a few scratches, the camera was really fine. Of course, what I forgot. Finally, of course, have you ever seen a wide lens in the range of 200 to 400?
No, so. I haven't. So that's a very good reason. And with that, so Klaus Brand, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay.